Hi, this is Todd Gleason. If you haven't yet picked up your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference, don't wait. Do it right now at willag.org, farmassetsconference.com, or 800-898-1065. We're in our fourth year of this signature Will Ag Illinois public media event, and it will be another good one. We'll take up the Farm Bill, the price of farmland, conservation management practices, and how they can be benchmarked into your operation, all at the Farm Assets Conference next Tuesday. From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 15th day of November 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vick. She's at Stuart Peterson. A bit later in the program, we'll take a look at the cash grain side of the situation with the folks at the Andersons Climbers facility outside of Logansport, Indiana. They make ethanol there. And then we'll take up the weather forecast as we close out our time together. Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City will be here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Jackie Vakes is now here. She's from Stuart Peterson to take up the marketplace. Hey, Jackie, thanks so much for being with us. I want to know what you thought about yesterday's trade and the market. It was a pretty rough day.
Well, it was just a downright ugly day is basically what it was. You know, and I have to admit, I did not expect that we were going to, break the trend line and go in and put another new contract low in. You know, and today we've gone down and we've tested the contract low. So, you know, let's hope that maybe, I guess we went a quarter cent lower than the low, but maybe we've got a chance here that we'll get a little bit of buying that comes into the market. It just seems as if, you know, this is like riding a roller coaster. One day you're up, the next day you're down. And I mean, there's reasons for it. There's no question about that. But at the same time, it's disappointing to see. I'm sure the farmers are very disappointed, but some of it comes just because, you know, we have so much grain that's sitting in the countryside. Everybody knows about it. You know, it's not like it's a secret. And we've got all this grain sitting in South America too. So, you know, the markets themselves, Todd, when you find there's no new news that could give you any upward momentum, the weight to the bottom is always much higher. You know, it gives the marketer and the traders the opportunity basically to look to where's their support? Where's the strength in the market? Will they allow it to go lower than a certain price? You know, and so yesterday we found that, yeah, we got down to this level. Now we'll see if this level holds, you know, and if this level doesn't hold, I would have to say 330 is certainly in the game, just from a psychological standpoint. But, you know, we're headed toward the time of the year when bins start to close up. You know, we're getting into the holidays. There's no question about that. So I guess the real question comes down to, will it be reflected in basis and an improvement in basis, which is pretty poor in a lot of places, or will it be reflected in a higher futures market? You know, it's and offset by a lower basis. You just don't know.
Well, I have to ask a question on that because there is an awful lot of corn around, and I was looking at the figures that you sent me, and it reminds me that the total supply of corn for this year is really roughly equal to the total supply of last year, but it seems like there's an awful lot of corn on the ground. I suppose that could have an impact on the basis and its ability to recover after the harvest.
No, there's no question about that. I mean, you know, we normally would expect to see a better basis as we go into the holidays just because it's harder for them, you know, to get people to actually be willing to deliver grain. But at the same time, you know, we hear of elevators that have a lot of corn on the ground too. So, you know, it's a situation, do they need it? And do they really need it this year? But you're right. I mean, you could have knocked me down with a feather when I saw 175.4 for a yield. I just wasn't expecting that. Let's put it that way. Not a higher yield than what we had last year. But, you know, in talking with producers, you do recognize, you know, the cobs were huge in a lot of places, you know, and that's what brought us these tremendous yields. And so, I don't know. I really don't think we're going to know a whole lot until we get into the January annual report. And then even if we have all the information at that time. But when we got into that supply and demand, when I saw that they raised, you know, there's two things that I consider to be fluid within the USDA demand report, and one is feed, of course, and the other is exports. You know, ethanol is not very fluid, and so, you know, they raised feed 75 million and exports 75 million. I couldn't believe that they raised exports 75 million. So that says one of two things to me. That says they aren't real confident on that 175.4 at this stage of the game. So, you know, it's easy to reduce exports, do all those kinds of things. And so when you consider that, you know, we're over 40% behind on our inspections so far this year, although we only have 2.5 months into the year, it's just, it's either that or they expect these prices to go significantly lower. And, you know, the old adage, low prices cure low prices, certainly works in this situation. So I guess we'll have to wait and find out just what it plays out to be. But I just couldn't believe they raised exports.
Soybeans were a world number from last week that moved the marketplace. What'd you see there?
It was. And you know, it's a situation where, you know, we saw a larger carryout. The bean number, even in Brazil, is still moving around here. You know, we saw CONAB come in, and you've got a lot of arguing going on down there about what it's really going to end up at. But the reality is, you know, the stocks-to-use ratio on world beans is at 28.4. Last year, we were at 29.2. So, you know, it's kind of interesting because it's building just like it's building everywhere else. But I think, you know, part of that build at the world level came out of the U.S. numbers. You know, we had a larger crop, basically. Well, actually, I shouldn't say that. I guess we came in 6 million lower than what we expected it to be, but very close. And so I think in general, it's going to be war. We're going to get to a point here where Brazil, they're going to start to harvest when we get to the end of December, beginning of January. Now they got old crop sitting there. What do they do with new crop? And so I think, you know, we're in a circumstance where we got to hope that they move some of that crop before they have to start to harvest down there. And it's concerning. There's just no two ways about it. But, you know, it's good to see that we're down a little bit from last year in terms of, and it's the same thing with corn at the world level. We're actually lower than what we were last year at this time by 23 million metric tons. You know, that's not just a little bit. So there's some, how do I want to say it, supportive news out there for us in general, just looking at the world numbers.
I made note that Brazil, while they had a slow start, caught up in their plantings, and they've been getting fairly regular rainfall.
They have, you know, and that certainly has that's kind of taken the wind out of any sails we get every single time that the market tries to climb higher. Planting there at 57% right now versus 56, which is a five-year average, you know, and I talk all the time about the fact that the exchange rate has an impact. And so selling has certainly developed, too, with the higher dollar and the lower real. And I give the guys an example, or everybody an example. If you looked at November the 9th, when we closed at 985, the exchange rate was 3.258, which meant that the Brazilian farmer got approximately 32 real for every bushel of beans. Now, I was working on this last night, so when you looked at January beans last night, we were sitting at 9.69, and the exchange rate was 3.31, and the Brazilian farmer was getting 32 real per bushel. Now, that's a 16-cent decline in the futures, and yet because of the exchange rate, they were getting the same amount. So that's the thing that we have to really focus on. Just because what we see happening in the futures here doesn't necessarily mean that it impacts them the same. And so anytime you see a bounce in the marketplace, which I would expect that some they may be selling against it now because we're up, we were up today, you know, they're not the same as we are. I guess that's probably the bottom line. They are just not the same as we are.
Hey, anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
Well, I got a couple things. I've been talking with guys, and we're hearing all kinds of interesting stories. You know, we had those high winds, which in some places they estimate they took about 50 bushel per acre of corn just because the cobs were so heavy, the stalks weren't strong enough. And We're hearing all kinds of different things about different seed companies that are issuing, in some cases, six-figure checks to these producers. There are circumstances. There's always some wheeling that goes on out there. It's very interesting. Some of these corn companies are going, well, we'll give you a six-figure check, and we're not requiring you to use that to buy our corn, but we'll put it against any corn purchases that you make from us. Interesting, isn't it? And then last week, you know, I talked about the Lock and Dam 52 over in Ohio, and I thought I went and looked back and looked at a few things, and it was built in 1928, and it's what they call a wicket dam. And I'm sure some people call it wicked. The failures cost the Army Corps of Engineers $13.2 million between September of 16 and October of 17. And they admitted that that money comes from an internal budget. And sometimes has to be moved from one area to the other area. That $13.2 million also doesn't include the most recent projects that they're working on, which will be pushed off to fiscal year 18. So, you know, it's a situation where the dams at the time they were put in, the locks and dams, were expected to last about 50 years. Well, 1928, we're 11 years from that dam being 100 years old. And it's the worst one as far as breaking down goes. It's just unbelievable how it backs things up on the river. That situation certainly didn't just start the last number of months. In fact, a lot of river workers went to social media and to folks like you, you know, to call for more funding, you know, because they've had over 10 years of problems. And, you know, in ag, Todd, we can't survive without river transportation. We know how expensive it is to move grain. You know, it just cuts into every ounce of profit that there is. And so I'm going to advocate that all of our listeners, you know, call their representatives. And, you know, I can tell you that when I went to the Ag Forum, now, probably, probably 4 years ago, I sat in on a river presentation. And after it was over, I went up to one of the representatives from Congress and asked them, you know, what's it going to take to get you guys to, recognize that this is a serious problem? And they said, well, the attitude is they're going to wait until a dam goes out, just like the bridge went out in Minnesota. And I said, that bridge that went out in Minnesota, there were roads that went around that. I said, if one dam goes out, that doesn't mean that's the only dam that's going to go out. But one thing it does mean is there's no way to go around it. You know, and so I can't stress enough how important this issue is to all of us.
Hey, Jackie, thanks so much. Just one other note, the on the wicket dams, the one in Peoria, which most people in this area will be familiar with, is also a wicket dam. And if you will make note, the reason it's called a wicket dam is because they actually raise and lower the dam as the river goes up and down. So the higher it is, the more likely they are to put the dam up. And if it's low enough, they lower the wickets. And there is a steam engine. And I believe 1928 or thereabout is the same time that the Peoria Dam was put in place. That steam engine looks mm-hmm. like a steam bucket, right? And they just have a hook on the end of it. They fish down to the bottom of the river, hook the wicket, and draw it up in place, and then lock it in place. And every wicket all the way across the river, they have to do that. And then they do the same thing to put them back down. Interesting stories indeed.
Very, very. I tell you, I think that the first time that basically I was exposed to it is went over to the Quad Cities and took some tours of the dam there and talked with the people there and just became fascinated with the story of how the dams and locks became and what the situation is now and how important it is for us to work on infrastructure. I mean, it's really bad. You know, if you get a full barge wanting to come through, they can only go through in most of those situations a half a barge at a time, you know, and the barge. So if they're pushing 6 or they're pushing 15 or whatever they're pushing, most of the time it can only handle half of what it is. And so it takes so much more time to put them through. But, you know, it's a situation where does the money come from? That's the big thing. But we know there's money there. It just needs to be allocated to the right place.
Yeah, there's money there, and there has been a fuel tax on all the tugs since Well, I just don't know how long, several decades at this point. That's just waiting for Congress to match it. It's already taxed and it's in the federal government. Yeah. And once the matching dollars are put in place, then things can move, or at least if my memory serves, that's correct. Hey, Jackie, thanks so much.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
You too. Jackie Vakes, of course, is with Stuart Peterson. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Do get your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference. It is next Tuesday, the 21st day of the month of November in Normal, Illinois. We kick off in that 9:30 to 10:30 range, run until the afternoon. A great day and a good event. If you've not signed up yet, take time right now to do it at farmassetsconference.com, willag.org. The cost is just $35. That includes the meal, the parking, and the deck next to the Marriott Hotel and Conference Center there in Normal, Illinois. And everything else that's happening throughout the day, we'll talk about farm legislation, and maybe we can even take up how they might be able to fund infrastructure and an expansion of the lock and dam system. The farm bill, of course, crop insurance. We'll take a look at commodity prices. We'll have a group of folks and analysts there to do that. And we'll discover how conservation management practices work into the economics of the farm. It's the Farm Assets Conference next Tuesday, willag.org, farmassetsconference.com, 800-898-1065 to buy your tickets today. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for Wednesday afternoon. Buy those tickets right now for the Farm Assets Conference. That's next Tuesday in Normal, Illinois. Great event. You'll need to be there. All the details online at willag.org, farmassetsconference.com. You can also buy tickets at 800-898-1065. We're now joined by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, a couple of weeks ago, one of our analysts, Wayne Nelson, said that every time La Nina was mentioned, we should do something about it. He had an idea. So I want to know if La Nina plays this week anywhere across the planet or not.
Well, you know, the marketplace is very excited about trying to get something to move this market to higher levels. And I think La Nina is going to be the excuse, at least perhaps in the near-term future here, because Argentina is starting to dry down. And I think there's going to be some trigger-happy people out there, and we're probably going to see the prices ebb a little higher. I'd like to urge a little caution, though, because I do not necessarily buy into the fact that we're going to have a serious drought in Argentina like we've had in the past two La Nina events. People tend to forget the fact that there's more than one weather pattern that prevails in any part of the world at any given time. And La Nina and El Nino have to interact with whatever those other patterns are. In the past two La Nina years, we had dryness in Argentina, so La Nina came along and capitalized on that, making it a whole lot worse. And we did see a pretty serious drought in both those episodes. I don't think that our weather pattern in Argentina is quite as dry biased for 2017-18 as it was in these other 2 years, and the La Nina event itself is very, very weak and may not even come to full fruition. So if we take all that into account, we need to be careful not to get the mindset here that we're going to see a wall-to-wall drought in Argentina of significance. We do have dryness out there right now in parts of Santiago del Estero, as well as Cordoba, and Cordoba is certainly a very important production area, and I don't see a lot of rain for them over the next 2 weeks, but they will get some, and the temperatures will also cool down a little bit. So the bottom line is that we're going to see some dryness in Argentina that may expand a little bit over the next 10 days to 2 weeks, but I'm not necessarily ready to say that this is the beginning of the end for them. I think that we'll get better rains a little bit later in the season.
As you go further north into the growing regions of South America, does La Nina have as much of an impact historically?
You know, not so much at this time of the year in Brazil. What tends to happen in Brazil is we get delayed seasonal rains, just like we saw in the early part of the growing season. But as you get deeper into November, and especially in December through February, you usually start seeing rainfall increases across parts of the region from Mato Grosso into Sao Paulo and Minas Gerais, and it usually ends up being a little bit too wet sometimes at the harvest time for the soybean crop. Now, with that said, there is a tendency for southern Brazil to turn a little dry. That usually occurs in the late December, January time frame. That would include Rio Grande do Sul in most cases, but sometimes it does expand northward into parts of Paraná and parts of Paraguay, and so we do need to keep an eye on that. I think that some of that dryness in Argentina will eventually shift to the eastern part of that country and then bleed over the borders into parts of Rio Grande do Sul and other areas in far southern Brazil. So there's still potential we could run up a little bit of interest in the marketplace with some changing weather in Brazil and Argentina, but I would sure be careful about how extreme you want to take that attack.
Hey, thanks so much.
Have a good day.
That, of course, is Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. If you're playing along with the Wayne Nelson La Nina game, that's 10. Oh, hang on, 11 times that you'll need to take care of that. Thanks so much. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.